Welcome to Causeway Casts, presented by Massholes with Mikes. We bring you Boston sports content in quick-hitting segments, followed by our favorite snake draft segment. Now, here's your host, Jeremy Guerin.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Causeway Casts. We have two of us. If you're watching along on the YouTube, you can see that. I am your host, Jeremy Guerin, joined, maybe as always, we can see how long this keeps going, by Jordan Leandri. This is your Boston sports podcast. This is going to be quick hitting content, 5 minutes segments per sport. And we're just kind of going to roll through it, talk through a couple of topics. And we did bring three that we wanted to kind of focus on. We're going to start with the Red Sox, transition to the Patriots, and finally finish up with the Boston Bruins.
Now, here's our Sox subjects.
Jordan, being a big baseball guy, I'm going to start with you here on the Red Sox stuff. Now, Robbie Ray recently having been announced to the Seattle Mariners, another pitcher off the board. Hot stove impression so far from your perspective about the Red Sox. What moves do they still need to make? Do you like how they've kind of operated so far?
I mean, I don't necessarily dislike any of the moves they have made. Like, I think LeCastro is a nice bench slash minor league depth piece. I think Michael Wacha is a very nice low risk, high reward signing. Would I've liked to see them maybe get into the market for somebody like Kevin Gausman or Robbie Ray? I would have liked to see them at least rumored to be interested in them. But I don't necessarily hate the approach they've taken, especially since in the past they've already had issues with, or a hesitancy to sign guys 30 plus to long-term deals, both Ray and Gausman, 30 plus 5-year deals. I get it. A lot of these prospects that they have that are coming up knocking on the door, they're like 20 years old. I don't necessarily disagree with the approach, and I'm just kind of trusting what they're doing right now because they've proven to be way smarter than I am when it comes to, you know, assessing rosters and putting together a team that's ready to compete.
So the one big signing that the Red Sox, and I use big in quotes, obviously, the one signing, major signing that the Red Sox have made so far is Michael Wacha coming over from Tampa Bay, 1 year, $7 million, thinking that he's probably going to bolster the back end of the rotation. I don't really see him as a bullpen piece until maybe the postseason, depending on if Bloom and company want to run this like the Rays. Do you like the Wacha signing? Are you upset that maybe that money could have gone somewhere else? What are you thinking?
I initially was like, $7 million for him is a bit, I thought with incentives, $7 million was fair, but a base salary, you're guaranteeing he makes $7 million. I thought that was a bit steep. But what I noticed was once he completely, or I shouldn't say completely, he did throw it, but only 4% of the time, he cut his cutter usage from 34% to 4%. He all of a sudden was pitching like Michael Wacha from St. Louis back in 2013 to 15. I don't think he'll be that kind of Michael Wacha, but if he can be.
Oh, I'd love that. Even the half Wacha, of that would be pretty.
Yeah,
sick.
If he can be the Wacha from like 17 to 18, you take that, especially for $7 million. I think it's a, like I said, good low risk, high reward signing. He probably will be somewhat similar to like what Garrett Richards was, not in terms of performance, but start in the rotation and then make his way to the bullpen late. As far as what I think he could, and I think as he could be as high as like your legitimate number four starter. I think that's about what they signed him to be. And I think people are overreacting because they see, you know, Scherzer, Ray, Gausman go for such gaudy numbers. They're like, those guys are so much better. It's like, yeah, they also made a lot more money and they're a lot older. So
the interesting thing to keep in mind with this, especially, is the impending lockout that's happening as a result of the collective bargaining agreement expiring. A lot of these guys are going to be dealt over the next, you know, I think it's less than 60 hours now, I believe, is what Passan said earlier today. Interesting to see how many of these guys go. I personally think a lot of the stars will still wait to after the lockout's over. Your Correas, your Corey Seegers, maybe one or two of them may end up deciding to go certain places before the deadline, but in my opinion, now is for when the cheaper guys will try and go, your relievers. I know Brooks Raley, you were mad about him heading to Tampa Bay. I know it's frustrating because I know you and Sean both actually had him on your offseason wish list that we did for another episode, but I'm just interested to see how the deadline affects things, because typically the last couple of years, hot stove, very slow moving process. Even when you get into spring training, some guys have yet to be signed. This should accelerate it a decent bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of those star shortstops, it'll probably be Seager, may sign before the deadline hits. I think a lot of guys should wait till after, especially people like Kyle Schwarber. Like, I don't expect him to sign by the deadline. I mean, there's a potential that the CBA will include a universal DH, and that's another half of the league that now could use Kyle Schwarber as a DH and thus improve his value on the open market. So people are freaking out about the Red Sox maybe not bringing back Schwarber, or other teams want to bring in Schwarber, but he's going to be smart about this. He knows that he signed a really team friendly deal because he was really bad in 2020 last year, and he bet on himself, and he fully succeeded to that in doing so. He showed that he can play first at a passable level. He's played the outfield the last few years, but if the universal DH is a thing, there's no shot he's not going to get some serious offers from the National League. So he's going to be smart about it and stick around till after the lockout passes.
All right, and with that, we're going to transition very quickly to our Patriots segment here.
And now, our Patriots points.
All right, here we go. Patriots time is here. We're going to be talking a lot about the Patriots and the Titans, the previous game. Patriots obviously winning 36-13. Jordan, does this game give you more confidence or less confidence in New England after their performance around about 24 hours ago now at the time of this recording?
I'm pretty much in the same boat as I was before. I thought New England was better than Tennessee. I know Tennessee was missing a bunch of guys. New England didn't necessarily play to a level where you'd think they won by three scores because they gave up over 200 yards on the ground. That was concerning, especially since it was Deontay Foreman, and I don't even remember Hilliard's first name.
Dontrell, I think.
Dontrell, yeah. Dontrell Hilliard. So, like, I mean, Foreman was – I only know of him because he was really good in college. I don't know much about Dontrell Hilliard. That was alarming. 231 yards on the ground between the two of them. But they still won by three scores. They are still very opportunistic on defense. Judon got another sack. Bentley factored into a sack. I thought Mac Jones, other than missing that one throw to Hunter Henry, which, I mean, it's a big throw. That's a touchdown that you wipe off the board by missing it. I thought he played pretty well. He did have a Roosevelt Nix.
You're right.
That's
you're
his
right.
name. He had a Roosevelt Nix moment. I think he originally thought he was going to get the late hit penalty, but then he got up and he legitimately pointed like, "Oh, that's a first down." It's like, "No, it's fourth and three, buddy." But
so I was listening in the press conference, and he goes, "I thought they were actually going to call the late hit on me. I didn't really think that it was going to be a penalty. I thought it was going to be a penalty, and I was going to get the first down, which is why I signaled for that." And I'm thinking, well, either you covered really well, or that was actually what you were thinking. Either way, it was pretty hysterical, and he and the press got a pretty good laugh out of it. In terms of my opinion out of this Titans game, it honestly left me feeling a little bit less confident. I'm not going to lie. I think the defense, the running game, opposing run offense has usually been a problem for the defense. Like, they've been able to get run on in multiple games last year, the year before. That was a real downfall of the boogeyman defense. And I think they showed it again, but I don't know if that was by design. I'm wondering if the Patriots said, okay, we're going to let the Titans run all over us as long as we keep Tannehill in check. And he only had, I think, 93 yards passing in the game. Like, they'll be all right, which is a strategy, I guess. I mean, you never want somebody to run for 270 yards on you, but I'll take it. Like, at the end of the day, the score probably doesn't indicate how close the game was, because it was 16-13 at the half. But anytime you can go and outscore an opponent 20-0 in the second half, I mean, that's a pretty good recipe for success. And I still am having a very difficult time judging this Patriots team, because it really hasn't felt like they played premier competition, obviously, with all the injuries Tennessee had kind of gone for. But do you think the Patriots should be the favorites in the AFC? They're healthy right now. They're obviously on a 6-game win streak. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think health goes a long way, and they're getting better. I think in a lot of the little things, I know there always seems to be this one thing every week that they're struggling with, but I feel like they've cleaned up a lot of the sloppiness from the beginning of the season. Obviously getting Trent Brown back is huge. Ramondre Stevenson's proving to be an absolute nail, steal of the draft. What was he, a fourth round pick?
Absolutely. I think late third, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, third round picks,
Perkins and Stevenson, but I'm not sure.
And then on top of that, Max looked pretty good for much of the last, I would say even before they went on the 6-game winning streak, much of the last 7-8 games, he's looked pretty good outside of a couple clunkers. Jonnu finally factored into the offense yesterday. That was nice to see. Hunter Henry has obviously been a great signing. Kendrick Bourne's turning into a stud of a wide receiver. They're playing at a level right now where I'm like, they're 1A or 1B, with Buffalo being the other team in that, factoring into that. So I'll know for sure, obviously, next week after they play Buffalo. But right now, they're definitely, if they're not one, they're two, and they're really close to being one.
And I think the top two teams in the AFC, and we went over it last week on our 15 questions on our regular podcast, Indy and New England, and Indy lost yesterday to Tampa Bay. It was a close game, but they still lost. Baltimore doesn't scare me as much as they normally would in previous years because they're so banged up. Buffalo just lost Trey White for the year. So I don't really know what to make of this Patriots team yet. I think I know, but every single week it seems like the AFC just kind of throws a new curveball at us in terms of both teams and upsets and stuff like that. But it was good to see just an absolutely packed Gillette Stadium. Home games, obviously big for the Patriots down the stretch. I think that they need home field advantage to advance far in the playoffs. And you know what else is important when it comes to, you know, home field advantage, packing Gillette Stadium, packing even the Garden is tickets. So, Jordan, obviously you're over there in Arizona. Do you have SeatGeek over there? Do you know? Do you have access to that when it comes to cheap tickets and affordable prices there?
Yes, I do. And they're especially cheap because the Diamondbacks are not very good at baseball. But yeah.
The problem with Arizona, of course, you know, it's really hit or miss. Jordan's out there with the Suns, massive win streak that they're running on right now. But he also has the Diamondbacks, who are just absolute dirt. And, you know, we're not here to go after the Diamondbacks. Maybe they trade the Red Sox Ketel Marte, but you know. I mean, it's kind of, they're an easy target. They're an absolutely easy target. So, I mean, depending on if you're in Arizona, you're in Boston, like me, you're anywhere else on the coast, you can watch your favorite team for, you know, a solid price. So use code Causeway at checkout for 15% off your purchase up to $50 at SeatGeek. Again, that's code Causeway at checkout for 15% off your purchase up to $50. Now let's move on to our Bruins segment.
Time to cycle the puck. It's Slapshot Setup.
All right, here we go. Last segment, Bruins segment, before we get to our snake draft at the end. Jordan, I know that I've been watching a decent amount of Bruins hockey, maybe even more than the Celtics lately. They obviously have been about the same, kind of hovering around 500. Current record of 11-7-0, heading into a game with the Red Wings. But my question to you, did they mess up their goaltending situation? Obviously, Tuukka Rask, a massively polarizing figure in Boston sports. Dan Vladar traded away at the draft last year to the Flames. Now you're rolling with Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman. What are your thoughts on the goaltending situation?
I didn't necessarily hate the commitment to Jeremy Swayman as kind of they're trying to do what they did with Rask and Halak with Swayman and Ullmark. And they paid Ullmark like somebody they expect to be able to withstand that kind of workload. They paid him starter money. But on top of that, Swayman looked like a capable starter last year. I get the thought process. I thought 5 years for Linus Ullmark was a bit much. It was,
yeah, because you're still going to be paying him a crap ton when you have to pay Swayman as well. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It just felt like another John Moore type contract where the player isn't necessarily bad. He's worthy of about the average annual value you gave him, but it's like a 2 year guy, maybe three, five. Like, that's a big commitment you're making to him. And that's something that it's worrisome because it almost feels to me like they're not ready to commit to Swayman full time. It obviously, you know, that means that Rask, if he does come back, probably only going to be for this season. And then they'll probably move on from him because they're not going to keep three goalies on moving forward. They're not going to do that. Maybe they trade Swayman and keep Rask. I don't know, but he's come off a torn labrum. So that's a little tough to gauge, but
the Ullmark thing, you're totally right when it comes to the term. I mean, if you remember when free agency started, they signed, I think, Forbort first, and it was a 3-year deal. And I was like, okay. Then Eric Howla came and Thomas Nosek, and both of those guys were on, I think, 2-year deals. Nick Foligno came afterwards, another 2-year deal. And I said, all right, so it looks like they're just trying to bolster the depth, which I had no problem with. Obviously, secondary scoring has always been a big need for this team since they assembled the so-called perfection line of Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak.
And they brought Taylor Hall back for 4 years.
Exactly. Taylor Hall was the big fish, if you will, of the free agency period, locking him up. And then they locked up McAvoy way long, right before the season started, I believe. But then they gave Ullmark this 5-year deal. And I'm looking at it going, what the heck is this? I didn't understand it. And I know Felger and Maz have definitely brought this up. I brought this up on the Big Bad Bruins Instagram, and I got roundly beaten for it for God knows what reason. But Vladar was making, I think, $750,000, and Swayman was making $900,000. You could have had both of your goalies combined for less than $2 million and just kind of tread water until Rask gets back. Because I think, Vladar has obviously shown that he can perform well in front of that gigantic Calgary defense. Guess what? The Bruins defense isn't that big, but if they had the money from Omark, they could have spent it on some of these guys to beef up their defense behind McAvoy. Because it just seems like they're really thin on the blue line right now to me. And while the secondary scoring actually is showing up, I don't know if you saw yesterday, but Jake DeBrusk and Eric Howlett were both healthy scratches, and they still won because Anton Bleed, of all people, is starting to score goals. Another That's one hilarious. Of those bums from Bruins past. But I guess the question for you here, 11-7, like I said, kind of middling around in the Atlantic Division. Florida's really good. Tampa, obviously two-time cup winners, a little bit less than they have been, but they're still pretty nasty. Toronto as well. What is the ceiling for this Bruins team?
I think it's pretty similar to what it's been the last couple of years. Like, would it shock me if they went on a Cinderella run and won the whole thing? No, they're a talented group of players. They're a really talented team. I think second round, though, is about where I would put their ceiling right now. And I guess it's all contingent on, one, if they do, in fact, bring back Rask, which it looks like they're going to once he's healthy. They're going to sign him, let him, you know, kind of work out with the team and then come back and play. But and Rask would have to stand on his head in the playoffs. You're not giving the postseason to, you know, Linus Olmark or Jeremy Swayman. You might get bounced in one round. Rask can win you two rounds, I think, but I don't see them being consistent enough to get through the second round, because it'll probably have to be against a team like Tampa Bay or Toronto to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think second round is a pretty fair ceiling for them. It wouldn't shock me if they like somehow broke through and on the roof and got to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think the ceiling is the second round.
I think it all depends on their opponent. If they get Florida, I don't think that they can match up with them. Tampa, we know, has their number. Toronto, on the other hand, I feel pretty good about for obvious reasons. But if they're, let's say, a wild card team, because those three capture the Atlantic Division spots and you get Carolina first round, I know Carolina is obviously not necessarily known as a hockey city, but they have a pretty damn good team this year. And Florida too, which is weird. All the warm weather teams suddenly are good and the cold weather teams suck. But I don't know. The Bruins have been pretty underwhelming so far for me lately. I want to see more, and I need to see some consistent goaltending performances in order to get that. And I don't know if this current tandem is enough to give you that until Rask gets back. But I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, It's so hard for me to judge this Bruins team, because you feel like they have other pieces coming, if that makes sense. Rask, I know Krejci has been, he's probably not coming back this year, but people haven't ruled it out for some reason. It's weird. So it seems like, oh, once they get this guy back, but will it be too late when they finally get there is the question. All right. Yeah. That'll do it for us on the main portion. So let's get to the snake draft.
And to wrap up, it's our Causeway Cast snake draft. Now, who's on the clock?
All right, here we go. The snake draft part of it. We have Jordan and Jeff alongside here. Three-person snake draft. We're going to go with the topic of biggest Boston sports villains. And there is a lot of different ways we can go with this. Any sport, all time, doesn't really matter. But Jordan, as the order had decided before we started recording this, you have the first overall pick. So who are you going to go with?
I'm going to take a pretty obvious one. I'm going with LeBron James. I think, especially since he went to Miami, because I know he was kind of their like little punching bag for a little bit when he was with Cleveland. Ever since he went to Miami, he's just been a major thorn in their side, whether it be just keeping them from advancing to the finals or just, you know, always knowing that he's going to be above you. So it kind of makes your whole offseason and your trade deadline completely contingent on whether or not what's up with LeBron and his team. Basically, and obviously Boston sports fans just despise the guy, even though he's part owner of the Red Sox now.
Jeff, your pick.
Yeah, I think LeBron specifically became a part owner of the Red Sox just to say he could own Boston sports one last time, especially after he was gone. But I'm going to go with, in my opinion, what I thought was the 1-1 here. That's Roger Goodell. I mean, talk about scandal after scandal, laying down punishments for a variety of, you know, the deflate gate, spy gate, that didn't hold up compared to other punishments around the league that should have been harsher. Obviously, Brady gets 4 games for allowing footballs to be deflated, and then other stuff goes on around the league. which I could say it's a little bit worse, and these guys aren't even getting games. Looking at a man down in Pittsburgh specifically. Seriously. But I mean, Roger Goodell, he's been the bane in the Patriots' existence as long as they have been a great football team. I think he's a clear villain.
All right. I actually get the guy that I wanted first overall at number three. So this is good. And I'm going with A-Rod. That was kind of a no-brainer for me. Guy's a tool. He's spurring the Red Sox in terms of free agency. He's pulled countless shenanigans. And while he has kind of mellowed out after he retired, God, did I hate him as a player. He was my most hated Yankee. He was my most hated player growing up because I was a baseball fan first and foremost, and I hated A-Rod, mostly because of the stunts that he pulled. He was a tool bag to other people as well, calling out that that pop-up when he was rounding the bases against the Jays, and then they dropped it because they thought someone else called it. But, you know, A-Rod seemed like a pretty slam-dunk pick for me. And for my wraparound, I can go a bunch of different ways here. I'm going to go basketball. I'm actually going to go old time, and I'm going to go with the biggest villain that ended the 86, quote unquote, that era of Celtics basketball. Bill Laimbeer absolutely deserves to be he deserves to be in this draft. Make no mistake about it. That dude, I never watched this guy play. All I did was watch videos and clips and SB Nation stuff. And even the Celtics documentary when he came to Celtics Lakers, I hated that guy. That guy seems like an absolute jack wagon. And I take a lot of pleasure in being able to say I got him in the second round because, man, did he suck. And he was just a goon. That's all he was. There was no skill involved with Bill Laimbeer. He just kind of mauled people. Jeff.
I'm also going to go basketball here, and I'm going to go with the most current Boston sports villain. That's got to be Kyrie Irving down in Brooklyn. I mean,
I thought you were going to say Enes Kanter.
Enes Freedom,
Freedom, that's right.
Enes, oh my God. I was watching the game last night, and I just yelled freedom every single time he did something. Freedom! Okay. Kyrie Irving, you know, he comes to Boston after wanting out of Cleveland, saying that he needs to be his own man. He needs to separate from his father, LeBron James, and run his own team. Absolutely fails, goes down in flames, promises Boston fans that he's going to re-sign, doesn't, goes to the Nets, and now I get to enjoy as I watch him tear down that organization, but obviously all the shenanigans that went down in last year's first round matchup in the playoffs between him, where he basically called Boston a racist city, and then, you know, someone threw a water bottle at him and he just used it as leverage to take it to a whole new level. Kyrie, I think he's worthy of a first round pick in terms of how much he has tried to hurt Boston's reputation as a sports
in fan. Terms of recency bias, like if you want to look at the most the current athletes, he's far and away number one in my opinion. Very I don't know close. If Jordan's going to kind of go with the current one as well, but he gets two picks here as part of his last two.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with a current one, and it's kind of funny because I want the Red Sox to sign this man, Carlos Correa. Red Sox fans loathe him, and it's so funny to me how much they hate Carlos Correa. And I get the whole like cheating scandal thing, but like your manager was a part of that, and it's really ironic. But when you mention the idea of bringing up of signing Carlos Correa, Red Sox fans, probably a good like 60%, 70% of the fan base are like, this dude sucks and Bogarts is better than him, and I hate this cheating scumbag and stuff like that. It's like, really, like, for starters, I won't get into the whole like talent disparity, but Red Sox fans genuinely hate this man. And I know they chant the F Altuve stuff. I think they genuinely hate Correa more. I think they just pick on Altuve because he's like 5'2".
All right, what's your wraparound pick here?
My wraparound pick is TJ Ward. I think he, a lot of the time...
good pick.
Just a knee-seeking missile a lot of the time. I know he knocked Gronk out of one game in Denver in 2015. That was the year they lost to Osweiler in the snow when they were going for an undefeated season. And then I think he also took another run at Gronk's knee a different season.
When he was on the Browns, 2013, he was the one who tore his ACL.
Yeah. So, I mean, TJ Ward, we're talking about one of the greatest tight ends, if not the greatest tight end of all time with Rob Gronkowski, and TJ Ward took him out of one season in his prime and attempted to do it again. Luckily, I think Gronk just got in his own head that he tore his ACL again because he reacted so much worse the second time. It was probably also because it was freezing cold and snowing, but like that dude was a knee-seeking missile and I absolutely hated facing him, even though other than those two plays, I mean, he was virtually harmless to the Patriots organization.
Jeff.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised this guy came to me, or he fell to me, but I think that Peyton Manning is definitely up there in terms of Boston sports villains in an indirect way to an extent, because yes, you know, he and Tom Brady had their rivalry while they were playing. I'll never forget watching that man cry on the sidelines after we beat him. One of my favorite moments ever. But as you know, as a Tom Brady fan, which Jeremy's not necessarily the biggest Brady guy right now.
Right now.
It's a bit of a sore subject. Once he retires, I think we'll all come back to loving him again.
Agreed.
While he was here, having to debate Peyton Manning fans who say that he is a better player all time, which as of right now, you know, not the case, but when he was playing and closer to his playing days was definitely in the conversation. Manning still holds the single season touchdown. Yes, passing touchdown record. Does he also hold the yards
Mahomes
record?
Mahomes beat him. He's got 56, I want to say. Actually, no, you might be right. Yeah, Mahomes finished with 50. You're right. Manning's got 56 in 2013. You're right.
Did he get the yards too?
Brady's got him on that.
Okay. Regardless, I mean, Peyton Manning during his time here, definitely a bane in Patriots fans' existence, just like Roger Goodell. I think those guys are one and two.
All right, and to wrap up here, I have a baseball and a basketball guy, and I wanted to go baseball again with George Steinbrenner, but I'm not going to because I want to get a little bit of diversity in my picks, and I'm going to take football here and leave hockey to the side because it was very hard for me to come up with two hockey ones. I'm going to go with Ray Lewis. I hated Ray Lewis. It's part of why I hate the Ravens now. That dude was a trash-talking just he knew he was good, and he was one of the few guys that when they came into Foxborough, I was scared. Like, I did not like facing him whatsoever in the playoffs. Obviously, when he left, the Ravens really suffered because him and Ed Reed, one of the two best defensive combos of all time at their positions. But I'm going to take Ray Lewis mostly because of what he meant to the Patriots fans. Like, he was the symbol of that defense. Part of the reason, you know, they have guys like Bernard Pollard, another knee-seeking missile. Gronk.
Yeah, that was debated heavily between Pollard and Ward, and I ultimately went Ward because he went after Gronk twice versus I think Pollard was the one who tore Brady's ACL, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Ray Lewis, I don't think much needs to be said there. I just didn't like him. It's part of the reason, like I said, that I don't like the Ravens even now. So thank you to Jeff and Jordan for joining me here. We will see you on our next episode. Maybe the three of us will be back for another snake draft. Who knows? See you then.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time for another episode of the Causeway Cast, presented by Massholes with Mikes.